From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We talked earlier with the team over at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. They talked about pharmaceutical advertisement and treatment efficacy. Well, right now we have a guest in the healthcare space using AI, the human genome, and more to improve health outcomes. So great to have back with us Catherine Stulin. She's the CEO of GeneDx, a small cap publicly held company. They're roughly about $270 million in market cap. Stock's up 25% year to date, and she is in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio. Nice to have you back. I feel like there's a lot of places I want to start. Let me start really big, broad, if we may, because we're in a funny, interesting, confusing at times macro environment. You play in a very specific space, but you've got to be watching market volatility, the headlines about the banking sector. How do you see the environment today?
So we've taken a very I would say responsible approach to how we're managing the company moving forward. So when I started, we combined two companies. So Sema4 and GDX actually came together last year. I took the helm of the combined companies May 2nd, and we had already started to see the pressures of the economy. And the company had been burning about $90 million in Q1 last year. So job one was really figuring out a plan to ensure that we could become self-sustaining as soon as possible. So we went through a series of changes in the company. We actually shut down a few of the business lines that were materially negative gross margins and were in their nascency or just were not performing. And where we landed was in a place where we have a distinct competitive advantage. We can really help people in a unique way in the marketplace that also happens to deliver on very healthy gross margins and is well reimbursed moving forward. So we've really been taking the era of growth at all costs is behind us, and we have been really focused on revenue driving growth moving forward.
Well, Catherine, I'd love to talk just about your main business, because it's pretty fascinating. And correct me if I misinterpret what you're doing, but you basically take the full genome sequence of a person and try to look for genetic diseases and that type of thing. Is that basically it?
So you're right on. What we do is essentially take a genome's worth of information and we distill it into actionable insights, which is an incredibly daunting task. If you think about the fact that it's only been about 20 years since the Human Genome Project delivered its first draft, really. So we've been really working to develop the technology that can take a genome's worth of information and deliver the information in a way that provides a definitive diagnosis, looking more comprehensively than a single gene like BRCA. We want to look at the entire scope of the genome.
So what's the holy grail, like, when we think about this? Like, in an ideal world, you would say, okay, we've mission accomplished. What would it mean for a patient and or a medical professional?
Ultimately, we want to diagnose disease as quickly as possible, get them on the treatment that's best for them, so truly personalized medicine, and get them on a healthier path. Now, ideally, what that means is we're all walking around today with DNA that can help inform our health, and it can either help diagnose disease immediately or even get to the point where we can prevent disease. But there's one piece that would make that information even richer, and it's the information that we find in each of our own EMRs. So being able to have an EMR and electronic medical record. Okay. So being able to take a look historically, having a longitudinal look at each of us and being able to say, what are the different lab tests that were taken? Mm-hmm. What did an MRI say? What different treatments have I been on? And be able to take the genomic information from within you and have that additional context from your own medical history that can then give us an even more precise diagnosis.
So it's not like just the case of out of the womb that we do this mapping and we know kind of what's to come. Is it even that?
That is a fantastic starting point. So we are starting to do newborn screening.
Yeah.
So we're working on a study right now called the Guardian Study. Mm-hmm. And that really is taking a look at healthy babies, sequencing their genomes, and screening for 250 conditions. So that is a fantastic starting point. And we do want to get to that point where we can make this available and accessible to absolutely everyone.
So your customers are more the scientific community rather than me bringing my newborn to you and say, can you sequence its genome?
Correct. What we're doing is we're working with providers because I've been in the genomics industry for 10 years. I've been in the healthcare industry for 30. It gets more and more before I know it. But really what we want to be able to do is continue to work with providers and ensure that the information can be delivered responsibly. Because when you have a healthy newborn, the last thing that you want is a whole bunch of worrisome information. What we want to be able to do is hold on to the information and when there is a symptom, mm-hmm. be able to provide on demand whether or not there's an underlying genetic condition. And I think what's really important about the study that we're doing right now, it is Wendy Chung, a fantastic pediatrician and geneticist out of Columbia who is driving the entire thing. 1,000 families have really enrolled in this since it launched in October. What we did was a retrospective analysis. So we took a look at our own database at GeneDx, and we predominantly test children. And what we did was we said if we took the Guardian screening criteria and applied it to our database, to our patients, mm-hmm. we actually would have been able to diagnose 20% of the children that we tested at birth.
Wow.
Instead, they went on for 8, 9, 10, 11 years without a diagnosis.
So in other words, okay, so that's interesting. Because I keep thinking about, we talk about disruption, innovation. We've seen it in a lot of different spaces. We certainly saw it as a result of the pandemic, mm-hmm. just in terms of buying online. You know, I never carry cash anymore as a result of it. But I do think about healthcare disruption. And I have been thinking the genome, like this has got to be where it all comes from ultimately. Mm-hmm. How tricky is what you're doing?
It is. Highly complicated. I mean, if you think about
why is it complicated?
If you think about the 23,000 genes, there is a very big gap that we call variants of unknown significance. So there's just an uncertainty about the characterization of those variants. Mm-hmm. Are they disease causing or are they not? So we're still in the early days of learning so much about individual genes and variants within each gene that it creates an inequity in and of the genome itself. There are certain variants that are very clearly pathogenic or not pathogenic, but mm-hmm. then there's all of these variants where we just don't have enough information yet. The more patients that we test, our underlying interpretation platform actually gets smarter.
So you need data.
We need more patients, we need more data, and then we learn more about those variants.
And it strikes me as, and I don't want to sound like a sales rep for your company here, but it strikes me as the type of thing that if I were an insurance company, I'd probably be on board with this. You know, you'd want to identify these type of conditions early. I mean, is that kind of the selling point for you guys?
It is fascinating to see 70% of commercial payers, so insurance companies, are paying for exome or genome, not at birth. So that's something we need to figure out in the future. But they're paying for it in the pediatric setting. What's even more interesting, so Cigna and UnitedHealthcare earlier this year both put out new medical policy supporting utilization of our exome or genome as a first-line treatment for exactly that. It helps reduce their costs. Because right now it's just a big trial and error of different tests, which are inefficient and creates a lot of waste in the system. So they're actually very much on board with ensuring that people are getting this technology because it helps them too.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
I want to get back to our conversation. Catherine Stuland, the CEO of GeneDx, is with us here in studio. I want to get back to what you guys are doing, because we were just talking in our break, Mike and I, with you, and there's a lot of more interesting things that we want to get to. I want to ask you, though, you said in the break that this is your first time as a CEO of a company. It's publicly held. It's a small cap, which can move around a lot. It's a week that I'm looking at your share price. It's down a lot. It's still up 25% year to date. How do you think about those things as you run your company? And it sounds like it's going to be a long, you know, runway, if you will, in terms of what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. Well, we happen to be, I think, in a very rare position, just having raised $150 million in January, which was a very difficult market to be raising money in.
Although glad you did it now.
So glad
then,
that we did it.
Versus now.
So glad that we did it. And that enables us to get to profitability in 2025. Okay. And to be in that position, I think is a very rare place to be. And what we've said to the team, the stock is going to be noisy. It just will be. And the best thing that we can do is stay focused on executing on our plan. We have a clear plan that gets us right to that 2025 profitability place. We have a lot of operating rigor for the team. So we're really, really staying focused on driving revenue, driving volume, bringing down our COGS. So we try to keep the stock price noise as much out of the discussion as possible and really keep it focused. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of patients that we're serving. We have a lot of customers. We work with hundreds and hundreds of hospitals across the United States. And so there is plenty to keep us busy. And what I say is, so long as we can deliver on the goals that we've put forth as a team internally, report that out to the street, the stock price is going to follow. So I very much believe that our board has been nothing but supportive of our kind of maniacal focus on execution this year and for the following year. So that's the best message that I think we can be delivering to the team. And fortunately, we have a very mission-based company. Mm-hmm. Employees come to the company sometimes because they've used our exome or genome to diagnose one of their own children.
Wow.
And so people really, really care. The samples that come into our lab, it is usually of a child who has a rare disease. It sometimes is a sample from a baby who's in the NICU, and the parents are waiting to get an answer. So there is very much a connection of exactly how important the work that we're doing day in and day out is in terms of being able to bring an answer, which brings peace of mind to parents, mm-hmm. and it helps get their child on a healthier path sooner.
You know, Catherine, when I think about what your company does and what its ambitions are, some of the real trendy market buzzwords come to mind: innovation, disruption. The problem with disruption is, you know, not everyone likes that, right? That there's often pushback resistance. And I'm picturing, you know, my kid's 75-year-old pediatrician talking to you and really not being on the same page, not being trained in genetics. So I'm curious, like, how, you know, what are the roadblocks to further adoption of this type of technology and using it in diagnosis and treatment? I assume there's probably some pushback from the medical community that is at risk of being disrupted from this. Is that fair to say?
So it's interesting. We have a groundswell of support from medical geneticists who are well equipped to be able to interpret the information, know which patients to use the information on, and they have put out very clear guidelines that other providers listen to. And what's interesting now is if you look at the medical societies outside of medical genetics, so the American Epilepsy Society, they've come out to tell their practitioners, so neurologists and pediatric neurologists, that if you think that a child has may have epilepsy, you're witnessing a seizure, you should use an exome or a genome as a frontline. So we are starting to see providers from other groups outside of the medical geneticists receive the message that this is something that can help them. It's our job to make it as easy as possible for them to identify which patients are eligible for mm-hmm. it. And then in turn, this is something we have not solved yet. In turn, we have to be able to deliver the information in a way that is easily understandable to a non-genetics expert. So that is a problem.
So the interpretation
of the
test
part.
Itself?
Exactly.
Right. So do you guys do that?
We do that.
You do that?
That is part of what we do exquisitely well, is being able to take all of that information and say, this is a positive test result. This is what it means for your patients. But because historically it really has been geared towards a genetics expert, part of my challenge to the team is to say, make it understandable for the 75-year pediatrician, because then it becomes much less of a barrier for them to utilize it.
Mm. So what does the test cost?
So we are in a very fortunate position after a lot of work and publishing a lot of data. 70% of commercial payers pay for our services. We're continuing to get more and more coverage. And in fact, United and Cigna just issued coverage earlier this year saying, utilize this testing. So usually 4 out of 5 patients have zero out of pocket, which is great. Our goal is to make sure that from an equitability standpoint, everyone has access. We mm-hmm. work with state Medicaids. And in fact, there's 6 states right now that cover exome and genome for baby as well as parents. So we're starting to see even more and more coverage across the board.
But if not, what would it cost? We've only got about 30 seconds left.
If not, then it's about $3,500.
I feel like I have a million more questions. Go ahead. You wrap it up real quick.
Well, I was just say, you know, is it a matter of a doctor suspecting a patient has something and sending them to you, or would it be more prophylactic? Say, ideally, you'd want to do it to everyone, I imagine.
Ideally, you want to do it to everyone, but if there is a potential that there is an underlying genetic condition, we want the clinician to order from us. We'll get them an answer and hopefully get that child.
And that's when it's covered by insurance, I guess.
But,
But the more data that comes in, the more tests that are done, it gets even better and better.
It does. Right? And the more testing we do, the more we learn that more people actually are impacted by this.
Hopefully you come back in a few months.
Love to.
And talk more about the progress you guys are doing. Catherine Stulin, Chief Executive Officer of GeneDx US, here in our Interactive Brokers studio. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.